You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. Coming up, the way out with solar and other inconvenient truths.
Radio EcoShock.
If we stopped using fossil fuels today, the climate would still heat up somewhat and civilization would crash. That's a nasty problem and we need a roadmap out. Robert Staton says solar power is the path forward. He's been teaching about energy and solar power for decades at California colleges and the University of California in Santa Cruz. Those years of expertise are drawn together in his new book, Power Shift, From Fossil Energy to Dynamic Solar Power. Robert Staton, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, we can assume most of our listeners know why we have to stop using fossil fuels, aside from the ground pollution that kills millions and limited supplies eventually, and scientists have warned that our carbon emissions can cause cataclysmic climate change. So what would happen if we stopped burning fossil fuels all of a sudden, and is that even conceivable?
That's not possible. Our modern civilization is entirely dependent on fossil fuels. Just to take one example, our modern food production and delivery systems run on fossil fuels for the farm machinery, transport, food processing, and retailing. All of that would grind to a halt. Stores have about 3 days' worth of food, so if deliveries stop, it would be a short time until desperation would lead to the collapse of society.
Well, I agree with you. Now, in your book, you lay out four stark choices we all need to make if we must phase out fossil fuels. Can you just list off those four directions for us, and then we'll take them one at a time?
Sure. I saw two necessary conditions that any future energy source must meet. It had no carbon dioxide emissions, and it must be big enough to meet our energy needs. So I saw four approaches that could satisfy those conditions. One is to go back to the energy systems we used before fossil fuels, use carbon capture and sequestration, better known as clean coal, use nuclear power, or use solar power.
Okay, let's start with number one. Various pundits like James Howard Kunstler suggest humans willy-nilly will return to an age made by hand. Do you think we can go back to technologies humans used before coal power?
Well, if they are willing to do a lot of hard physical work, I think a few individuals could do it, but not with the populations that we have today. Just taking the food production example again, replacing the farm tractors that we have today running on fossil fuels with horses requires feeding those horses. And that alone, just to the land needed to feed the horses, would not only take up all the farmland we have, but twice that amount. So it's really an impossible situation. I think this option would only come about if our civilization does collapse, but that would not be something that we would choose to do.
And your second step is to capture and store the carbon from fossil fuel burning. The United Nations Panel on Climate Change assumes we will do this. Is that a rational plan?
Well, it seems like a good idea. Since carbon dioxide is the source of the problem, why not just capture it and pump it underground, and then we don't have to change anything else? But it can only work for stationary sources like power plants, not for moving cars and trucks. So it's not a complete solution. When pumped underground, that carbon dioxide has to stay there without leaking back into the atmosphere for decades or even centuries if it's going to work. And that certainly has never been tested. And the volumes of gas are unbelievable. The volume of carbon dioxide gas emitted worldwide is about 15 times the volume of the world's oil production. So while we would have one huge industry extracting oil from the ground, we would need a much larger industry to pump 15 times that volume back into the ground and making sure we don't trigger earthquakes. So I don't see this as a real solution.
Okay, number three. Some scientists, from James Lovelock to James Hansen, say we need massive amounts of nuclear energy to get off fossil fuels. What do you think?
I'm a physicist who once thought that nuclear power was the logical replacement for fossil fuels. But the more I looked into it, the more I began to oppose it. First, there is the danger. We have had three major nuclear accidents in 3 decades, Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and Fukushima. For many countries, three strikes and you are out, and they are abandoning nuclear power. Then there is the nuclear waste problem. Reactors routinely generate the most dangerous material on the planet in huge quantities, and we have not yet figured out how to store it safely for the centuries it takes to cool down. You can't just bury it because it will eventually leak into the groundwater. The storage system really should have been in place since the beginning, but even 50 years later we don't have it because the problem is so difficult. And using nuclear energy to generate electricity really borders on the absurd. The electricity gets used up within seconds of being generated, running our toasters and air conditioners and such. But we are saddling many generations to come with the job of caring for the long-lived nuclear waste. This is, in my opinion, grossly unfair to future generations.
So as a longtime researcher and teacher of solar power, you say it's going to work. You know some of us have doubts about that. Why don't you lay out the most common arguments people bring up when you tell them and why they say solar can't work?
Well, some think it isn't big enough, but that is simply not based on fact. If you were to add up all the energy stored in the fossil fuel reserves in the world, coal, oil, and natural gas, the sun delivers that much energy to Earth every 5 days, so it's certainly big enough. Some think it costs too much. That argument is fading quickly as the price of solar equipment comes down. And remember that we are comparing the cost of clean solar to the cost of dirty fossil fuels. If we were to pay the full cost of cleaning up fossil fuels instead of just tolerating their pollution so we had a fair comparison, then solar would be much cheaper already. And some point out that solar energy is intermittent while our economy runs 24/7.
Yeah, but can we overcome that? I mean, the sun doesn't shine always, and it certainly doesn't shine at night.
Well, let me ask you a question. Can you take a shower when it isn't raining? Of course, because we build water storage systems that capture water when it comes to make it available when it is needed. Likewise, a solar future requires installing energy storage systems to do the same thing with energy. We didn't have to do that with fossil fuels, because they come with energy storage built in, a few million years worth. I devote a whole chapter in my book to all the exciting research going on right now in energy storage, from new batteries to flywheels to conversion to liquid fuels that can be stored. Energy storage will be a necessary part for this transition to succeed.
And we can store it even with water. We just pump it uphill and let it run back downhill through turbines. That's another way to store it as well.
It sure is. Exactly.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and our guest is Robert Staton, author of the book Power Shift, From Fossil Energy to Dynamic Solar Power. What about heavy industry, Robert, like mining and metal manufacturing? Can solar do that job?
Well, any industry that runs on electricity can run just as easily on solar-generated electricity. It won't make any difference as long as they can get enough of it. For example, many steel foundries use electric arc furnaces to make high-quality steel because they don't introduce impurities like coal does. That steel could be made from solar electricity. Some industries need liquid and gas fuels for their processing, and those can also be produced from solar energy. First, you generate the electricity and use the electricity to produce hydrogen. And then through various chemical processes of heat and pressure, you can convert that to whatever liquid or gas fuel is needed. Those are processes that already exist today. But it is expensive relative to the fossil fuels coming out of the ground, which is why we don't use it much now.
This past week, the Brookings Institute held a conference on a new energy path for India. Hundreds of millions of people there don't have electricity from the grid, and the government is still planning and building more coal-fired power plants. What could they do instead?
India is following the traditional development model by imitating the developed countries with centralized power plants. But then they will also have to build an expensive grid to distribute that electricity to all the towns and villages. And, of course, they will be faced with replacing those coal plants in 10 or 20 years because of their carbon emissions. I think they should just skip the coal step entirely and go straight to solar. Since solar is a distributed energy source, it can be reach all of those villages before the grid can be built.
Right. They can put the panels right on top of the places that they're needed. I think that's a beautiful solution for India. I hope that they will listen to that. Another big question is whether solar power can replace itself. Suppose we build big solar plants today, as are being built in California and Pakistan, other places in the world, but we use fossil fuels to do it. What happens 25 or 30 years from now when those plants need to be replaced?
We certainly need to invest fossil energy today to start the solar transition. But as solar equipment comes online, we can use the solar energy it generates to build solar equipment in a kind of breeder plant. One of the first PV plants that was built in the 1980s actually demonstrated that.
When I spoke with Richard Heinberg a few weeks ago, he warned that increased solar by homeowners would eventually force a major restructuring of the big corporations who now hold an energy monopoly. In his scenario, the wealthy go off grid because they can afford to, while the poorest in society have to pay more and more to maintain an inefficient grid system. Robert Staton, what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think that's probably a realistic scenario. There is no question that the role of the electric utility companies will change during this transition. But the traditional role where the utility company generated all the electricity and handled all of the distribution, that's already obsolete. Energy deregulation enacted over the last couple decades by many governments has created a market for energy production from many sources, and the utility companies already buy into that and distribute it. So I see that process continuing and the utility companies transitioning more into providing services, two in particular. They will distribute electricity, but now they will be doing it in both directions instead of just one way. And they can provide energy storage services, so individuals don't have to install batteries in their garage for their solar panels. We are already transitioning to a smart grid, which is basically power with communication combined in both directions. And that will help immensely with this changeover to a variety of different distributed energy systems.
Another problem, Robert, is more difficult for me to express. For example, scientist Tim Garrett says that any shift in technology just means more industrial activity and inevitably more fossil fuel emissions. Can we overcome the initial burst of fossil fuels required to start down the solar path on a big scale?
Absolutely. There was a study by the Institute for Policy Research and Development that examined the energy burden of building a solar-based energy system. They estimated that by devoting just 1% of the current fossil fuel energy use to this transition, we could build all the solar and wind equipment to transition completely in 40 years. And during that transition, it becomes self-sustaining if about 10% of the solar capacity is dedicated to building solar, continuing the breeder concept that I described earlier.
Robert, do you have solar power personally, and does that question matter for the overall development of solar power?
Yes, my wife and I live in a home powered by photovoltaic panels. We turned the system on April 28, 1997, so we just celebrated 18 years of solar living. Over those years, I have given tours of my home to hundreds of people, many of whom went on to do solar themselves. The more people see that it works, the more people will want to do it. And I think that's driving a good part of its growth.
Now, I asked that question because I'm wondering if you see the coming solar shift happening at the government and corporate large-scale level or more from millions of home and farm electricity users seeing a better and cheaper option in solar.
I think the balance will be more on the latter. That'll be a lot of distributed systems at homes and commercial operations and farms. But it will be a mix of both. Photovoltaic panels are modular, so they work just as well in a small system as in a large system. I envision rooftop systems in neighborhoods and towns supplying most of their own local energy, while the big centralized solar and wind arrays can be used to power industrial operations that need more electricity than they can generate on site.
Yeah, I know the U.S. military is already looking into solar in a big way. Now, it seems one reason solar became so big in Germany and France was a guaranteed good price for any excess power that was produced. Plus, there were finance packages to get us past the first big installation cost. Is there any hope of seeing that in North America?
It is no longer hope. It is already happening. Germany used something called feed-in tariffs, or FIT, which pays a premium price for solar electricity to encourage its initial growth, with that price declining over time. to encourage you to act sooner rather than later. In fact, Ontario already has a FIT program, actually two, one for large energy developers and a micro-FIT program for homeowners and other small operators. And if you don't want to pay the large upfront costs, you can lease a system. In that case, a third party installs and maintains the solar system on your roof, and you pay a monthly fee that is lower than your current utility bill. You don't own the system, but you get many of the benefits. What you don't get with a lease is the free energy that comes after the system has paid back its initial cost. Since the panels typically last 30 years, that can be significant in the long run.
So I thought the first and largest advances in alternative energy in America were in wind rather than solar. I'm thinking of the big installations in Texas and even in Alberta, Canada. Why are you big on solar rather than wind power?
Well, wind power works really well in a really windy place, a place where the wind bothers you a lot. But most places are not that windy. But solar photovoltaics, they work almost everywhere if you're not blocked by the buildings or trees. And PV panels don't move or make noise, so you can mount them on your roof, on overhead racks, over parking lots, and along highway medians. So I think solar PV has much greater potential to grow big enough to meet our energy needs. And in my book, I wanted to stress a solar source that the average person could participate in.
So your book, Power Shift, tells us a lot about transition. According to recent science, we have very little time left to go before we go past some awful climate tipping points. How fast is your proposed transition, and is it fast enough?
I outline one scenario in my book that says we could reach 100% solar by the year 2060. And other studies have shown pretty much similar time frames. Is that fast enough? Well, I can't answer that with any certainty, and of course, neither can anyone else. But we are already on a very rapid growth path for solar, with solar PV growing about 45% per year for the last 4 years. The problem really is that we're just getting a late start. Had we pursued it in the 1980s during the first energy crisis, instead of falling back to cheap oil like we did, we would be much further along today.
Well, let's go forward 10 years to 2025. What do you think the energy scene will look like?
I think in 10 years, the cost of solar photovoltaic energy will be cheaper than fossil fuel energy, including coal. Right now, some people are willing to invest a little extra money to help the environment or to make a better world for their children. But by 2025, solar will simply be the cheapest energy, and everyone will be scrambling to get it. In fact, so much so that the demand may temporarily push the price up. I think every surface with good sun exposure will be viewed as a potential source of income by the owner. Buildings probably will be designed with rooftop power generations rather than just tacking it on as an afterthought like we do today. And I think we will see energy storage systems coming online to even out the supply. But we probably won't actually see them. They won't be very visible if the utility companies handle it as a service.
Well, some of that is already happening in Europe. I know that in Germany, you know, every barn roof practically has solar panels on it. And then in France, they just passed a law saying that any new construction either had to have a living roof where it's all green or solar on it. So we're starting to see the beginnings of what you just predicted. Now, some people insist that life will have to be just like it is now, only with renewable energy instead of fossil fuel. I suggest we have to make some big changes, yeah, even sacrifices, to save a livable climate. Do we have to give up some things or change our expectations?
Yes, you will have to give up your incandescent light bulbs. Now, I don't mean to sound flippant. I'm just using that as an example of how we will have to give up wasteful energy habits. The incandescent bulb is a 19th century technology and is only about 5% efficient in converting electricity to light, where compact fluorescents and LED lights are 5 times as efficient. Getting to a 100% solar future will come sooner if we can bring down the energy demand as fast as we ramp up the energy supply. And we have a lot of room for improvement in energy efficiency without altering our lifestyles. For example, the per capita energy use in Europe is half that of the U.S. and Canada for a similar lifestyle. and no one would consider them deprived. And I found when I started generating my own electricity that I was much more motivated to use it efficiently so that I could extend my precious resource as far as possible. It seemed saving electricity from the utility company just didn't motivate me as much.
Is there anything else you would like to talk to us about?
Sure. This transition to solar power should be viewed as the last energy transition we will need to make. The basic solar resource, the sun, is good for another 5 billion years. If we maintain and replace solar equipment, we won't have to go looking for a new energy source in 50 or 100 or even 1,000 years. If you look at it in terms of human generations, the fossil fuel age started around 1800 and will end by 2100 if we are to survive. That's 300 years or about 12 generations for the whole fossil fuel age. The solar age can last hundreds or thousands of generations. So we are the pioneers. And I think that's something you could tell your grandchildren.
That is inspiring. We've been talking with author and educator Robert Staton. His helpful new book is Power Shift, From Fossil Energy to Dynamic Solar Power. Probably because of his long experience teaching all things solar, I found his book accessible and useful right away. Find links to follow up on this interview in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Robert, thank you for talking with us on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.